A fast-paced episode featuring Atari's Intellivision relaunch, Nintendo's Virtual Boy and Fallout 4 on Switch, Halo Campaign Evolved, and Still Wakes the Deep. We'll take some jabs at Starfield, Ubisoft layoffs, Steam market stats, and PC tune-up tips. Makes my toes tingle.
Welcome to the Extreme Gaming Podcast.
Hello, welcome back to the Extreme Gaming Podcast, episode 304. It's amazing how quickly time flies by. I'm Trev, as always, and joining me today is... Introduce yourself, lads.
GreyGamer25, I'm always here. That's why I have grey hair.
And I am Hans, known as Megal from Hell, and I'm kind of regular now, I guess.
Come on.
You're always welcome on, so you know.
Yeah, you're always welcome. Come on whenever you want, mate. It's you think you only talk about hardware, but actually, to be fair, you actually come and give your opinions and other stuff and gaming news and games and all that. So
That's what's fun with all of us, because we all have different views on it. Sometimes they congeal, sometimes they don't. It doesn't matter. It makes it all fun.
Exactly.
And that's the whole point. You know, that's the whole point.
Exactly. Grace told me that I'm sacked from giving you a little sneak preview of what's coming on today's episode, because I've been demoted for special guests that come in at the start.
Yeah, especially,
and we have to pay way too much. Last episode, we had to pay Darth Vader a shit ton of credits to come and do his voice part. So
trying to get him cheaper, but then he did one of those things and I couldn't.
The choke slam, yeah. Or the choke slam, listen. I'm sounding like a wrestler. Yeah, I know what you mean. Right, okay, lads, we shall crack on then. And I've got some interesting things to mention straight off. This takes me back to Nostalgia Lane.
A
little bit, and probably Grey as well. Actually, Grey will remember this a little bit more. Yeah. It's bigger in the States. And the headline reads, decades after the first ever console war, Atari is re-releasing its former rival Intellivision console. Right, now it'll be one of these emulation jobs, HDMI in the back. I'll get, maybe Grey can stick in a little cheeky picture for people to see what we're talking about. Sure. Grey knows this well, but for those that don't, this was released by Mattel, toy company, in 79. So I think Grey was already at least 40 or 50 by then.
I had an Intellivision.
I did.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
I actually had a real one. That was cool about it. I was like, oh my God. It's like,
right, I tell you what, we'll give people a little bit of information on it, and Grey, you can tell me what you remember about it, because I'm interested to get your opinion on this one. So it was actually responsible for starting the first ever video game console war, and it was going up against the Atari VCS, later renamed the Atari 2600, as people remember.
Did I do that?
Good man. Following Atari's acquisition of Intellivision brand in 2024, the first ever console war definitely ended. Yeah, that's a safe way of saying it. by announcement of Intellivision Sprint, an updated Intellivision was going to be released by Atari. Now, it will be released in December the 5th in USA and Australia, and the 23rd in Europe, and it will be priced at $150 or £100. And like I say, it will have the HDMI port at the back, as well as a USB port for library expansion, and the 45 games that will come with it include baseball, soccer, super pro golf, sea battle, space battle, Astro Smash, Star Strike, and Boulder Dash. These are the shittest names for video games ever, I'm just saying.
The only one I know is Boulder Dash.
That's where the saying comes from, isn't it? Boulder Dash. You hear some Americans say that.
Well, the one I remember is baseball, because we used to play that game all the time. That was one of the only games we could afford. It was just one game or two games. But we used to have fun with that. And to this day, though, I think that the name Intellivision is one of the best freaking names. I don't understand why they didn't do more with it back then somehow. You know, it's a great name.
Oh, it really is, Grey. It's a fantastic name. I absolutely adore it. What I'm actually going to do, is be a little bit cheeky here. And can I? Yeah, I probably can, actually.
By the way, where's your camera? Because you look like you're looking off to the side all the time.
I am looking off to the side. Yes, correct. Don't have a choice in that one. Okay. This one here is, well, look at Hans. His is above his. He never looks at the camera. Throw the notes changed there. Gray, what do you remember about this? Tell me, talk to me about it.
Everything.
Everything.
Well, first of all, the look of it is exactly the same as far as, you know, looking at the front of it or the top of it, front of it. The controllers on it look exactly the same, except that they're now wireless. We had a black coiled wire, not the strong straight ones, these coiled things, which is kind of a pain because you can only stretch it so far.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to play the game. So that was, and of course we didn't have the HDMI or anything, but some of the games that were going by all of a sudden were like clicking with me. I remember playing the fish shark one or whatever. I remember doing that. I remember playing the Invaders type, whatever that was, and baseball. I don't know if I remember too many more of that, but that thing was, it was just like, man, I had my friends coming over the house. We're all like, you know, ooh, television. And I totally forgot about the slide-in overlays until they mentioned it. I didn't even remember those until all of a sudden, oh, that's right, that's right. They were pretty cool because it was different, you know, to put the overlay in every time you played another game. It made it simpler.
Is that the controller thing, Gray, you're talking about? Can you talk to me about that controller? Because it looks like something from a bloody Power Rangers morpher scene.
Well, yeah, it looks more like a calculator with numbers on it, right?
It's got a dial on it as well. It's...
Yeah, the dial was just for things, for games that you would need the dial, obviously, like a Space Invaders or whatever. Yeah. But the overlay was designed to be obviously overlay with whatever numbers are underneath it to go along with whatever game. So each overlay had something different about it, and some of them overlaid nothing. I mean, there was a number underneath, but it wouldn't do anything unless because the overlay wouldn't allow it, so to speak. So that way you had it. The only thing with the overlays, of course, is that if you're playing one or two or three games all the time, man, you're shoving that overlay in and out and in and out and in and out, and all of a sudden it's got like all these scratches all over it and stuff. Like,
doesn't sound practical, does it?
Is that why you still use trackball mouse, by the way?
Sorry?
Is that why you still use your trackball mouse, by the way? Is that some sort of
No, there was no trackball back then, man. But yeah, because back then it was actually very practical because they were trying to figure out how they were going to do this. You know, how are we supposed to, you know, have different controls and how can the people remember by just punching the same thing all the time? If you think about it in a way, you know, with a controller nowadays, you have to remember the B and the A and the X and the, and of course we all get used to that. But imagine if you had some kind of an overlay that you could put on your controller every time for whatever game. That'd be pretty cool. You know, and stuff. So nobody's really done that. But, you know, so I thought that was pretty smart for back then anyway. The only other downside was we were playing on a black and white television. So I really couldn't enjoy whatever color was going on.
That is true. Yeah. I'm looking here to see, like, I don't think it was a big thing in Europe. I'm not saying it wasn't here, but
you know, we started over here with Atari mostly.
And like that was
2000, if I remember correctly.
Well, we had both, so it really was the wars, like they said, because we did have both.
I'm really tempted by this, boys, but I like emulation, but I'd like to have the originals as well. So trying to get original one of this would be hard. I think that's pretty value, £100 and. Out just in time for Christmas, and
that's not a bad 45 price at all.
Games.
I probably will get it just for the sheer nostalgia of it because I used to play it, you know, and
it's wireless as well. So
right, yeah. Thank God. You have no idea how much that coil wire used to drive us freaking nuts. We're sitting there. I think we almost were pulling it right out of the machine because it wasn't long enough.
Oh yeah, you know? They did that too with the Atari. Like
yeah. But the thing I like about this one, though, not just the price. That's one of the major concerns. Like, I was ready to hear, like, a $300 price, and I was going to go, that's pretty cool. I ain't getting it. You know, but when they went, like, more like $150 or whatever, now I'm going, all right, now we're talking. But the thing they really enjoyed about that is, for the most part, with the exception of the couple little things they said, it looks exactly like the machine. I mean, down to the overlays, which is really cool. You know, and stuff. So that's probably the most... you know, retro thing I've seen of anything that's come out, you know, lately, and really stuck to it, you know, for the most part. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. Sorry, I was having a bit of a mare there. I was having some tech issues.
I hope I can stream it, because, you know, if I get it, I want to be able to stream it so other people can watch me play television.
But for the rest, you don't want to play like those kind of games. When I suggest you want to. The graphics are not good enough, you say.
No, the graphics are crap, but I would only play it once in a while just for, again, for the nostalgia factor. I'm not going to make a habit of playing it.
The next thing that wasn't on the notes, but I was going to, while we're down nostalgia lane, was I was going to quickly share this with you. I've never had one, but I want one. It's a little VR headset, if you remember this from... Oh, what's going on here, actually? Yeah, it's going absolutely nuts. Apologies, guys. Technical issues, they're always a problem.
Don't worry.
It was a little VR headset from Nintendo back in the day. Does anyone... Actually, no, tell a lie. That is not it. You think I would be ready?
Back on the television.
I know what you mean. I used to have the Nintendo robot, and I gave that away.
What?
I gave the robot away.
That's not what I was talking about.
No.
No, but that could have been worth some money, that robot.
Yeah.
Could it? Could it have been?
Oh, yeah.
My parents gave that to me for some Christmas or something, and like after a year, I was so bored of it, and I just gave it away to a friend. I was like, oh, my God. And I know what the VR thing is that you mean also. So they were released around the same time, I think. So
there's always a story behind that.
I give up. Anyway,
let's give up.
I'll just talk about it anyway, regardless. So it's a Nintendo VR Virtual Boy. You might have heard of this back in the day.
Yeah, I think I did,
Looks like a red little device that sits on the table above you. And you just kind of peer into it. Can't be good for the neck. There wasn't many games that came out for it at all. But Virtual Boy, VR, and this thing doesn't have many games for it at all, but it's actually coming out for Nintendo Switch Plus owners subscription. And the service will be free, but you need to either buy the headset, the Virtual Boy like device itself, or you can get like a pocket one. Like a little cardboard crappy one. It's actually reasonably priced, £66 for the actual unit itself, and you just put your Switch 2 in front of it. And once you do that, you can actually play some of these old games from back in the day. There wasn't many. I think there's 14 titles, I think, they had in total, not many, and they're going to slowly release them. There was like Mario Tennis was one. Golf was another one. Wario Land, if you remember that, Tetris Mario as well, and it kind of had a kind of red and black huey kind of effect. I never had one. Did any of you boys have this back in the day, or have you heard of it?
I heard of it, and I just checked eBay. If you want one now, you're looking about a €400 buying price.
Yeah, that's why I think I'll buy the one. It's £66, mate.
Yeah.
It's a lot better.
Hans did find the Virtual Boy picture. You sent it on Discord.
Yeah, sorry.
just a picture.
Yeah. I will... I can't do pictures at the moment, unfortunately. But I found that pretty interesting. The other thing that will come up before the last thing I've got, it ties in nicely with what Hans wants to talk about as well. This is useful for us as well as Switch 2 owners. Fallout 4 is actually coming to the Switch 2, which is a bit of an achievement because I don't know if it would be able to run that, but it turns out it can. It's coming out next year at some point. It's called the Anniversary Edition, and it's got 6 official add-ons and 150 pieces of Creation Club content, which is a hell of a lot. Thankfully, though, for us, we'll get this way, way quicker. We'll get this as soon as November 10th, the anniversary edition. So, you know, a bit of an overhaul, all the added bells and whistles on it. It'll be on the Xbox Game Pass as it usually is. I haven't finished Fallout 76, so I don't know if I'd get round to this in time. You boys have both played this game, though. Have you both beat it, though?
Yeah, I've beaten Fallout 4 multiple times back in its day because... I was one of the few people that actually liked Fallout 4.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
I mean, a lot of people say it's the worst Fallout. I agree it's not as good as New Vegas, I understand.
The worst one's got to be Fallout 76, surely.
Yeah, I don't like Fallout 76. I tried it like a year and a half ago, and I don't know.
I played four, but I only made like half the game, and that was probably about it. It had a lot of freaking glitches and problems way at the beginning for a while. I mean, all kinds of weird stuff was happening. People were landing on your roof. Pets were upside down. I mean, it was really strange.
Great. I just checked my Steam. I played that game for 171.6 hours.
Oh my God.
Which one?
Fallout 4.
Oh, okay. And well, I got some good time in it then.
Yeah. Last time I played it apparently was April 25, 2024. Oh, yeah, that was for the ray tracing update or something. They did like an update.
Graphical overhaul as well.
Which is right.
I mean, pretty impressive. It just means we all got all these expansions and things included because I think the only standard game's on Game Pass at the moment, so you'd miss out on all this good stuff.
I am wondering, though, how are they going to make this work on the Switch, too? Because they also needed to postpone Elden Ring, I guess, or whatever it was, because it just plainly doesn't work.
Well, I think this will work because it's an older game. It's like 10 years old or something at this stage. They don't really use DLSS, but, you know, like they've got that option there. That's what gives it a chance of actually working. And it's a no-brainer for it, making extra money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it also ties in with the second season of the show coming out in December, which I'm really looking forward to because I love the first season.
Yeah.
You've both seen that, haven't you, the first season?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, great. Loved it.
Yeah,
the trailer's been out for quite some time for stuff.
It's one of the best shows I saw, you know, the last few years.
Yeah, we need another trailer. We do need another trailer before, and we probably will get another one, to be honest.
Yeah.
The last thing I've got on my agenda here, I realise I've actually mixed up a bit of gaming hardware news. I am very naughty. But I do find this interesting. It will tie in what Hans is going to talk about after me. And that's AMD trying to milk a little bit more out of the customer. The AMD Ryzen 9 9950X3D2. So that's a 2 in the end of it. It's CPU to feature dual X3D CCDs for up to 129 meg of cache, and then the Ryzen 7 9850X3D will get boosted to 5.6 gig clock. Now, this screams to me NVIDIA supercards a little bit, because it's not the next gen. It's just trying to milk it out a little bit, give a little bit more clock speed and whatnot. Your thoughts on this, Mr. Hans?
This screams something totally different to me, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later, though. But is it milking? Yeah, but I also think they know what the problem is with the 9950X3D dual CCD chip.
Yeah.
Because they have to know. I mean, yeah, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I do hope this works, though, because if this does what I think it would do, then it would solve part of the problem. Not all, but it would solve at least one part of the problem in gaming. I'm talking about gaming, by the way.
Yeah.
For reference, I mean, content creation, this is going to be blazing fast, and I don't think you get any better than that. I'm just talking purely about gaming in this scenario.
Got you. Yeah, no, of course, that's what we're interested in first and foremost. Starting off with the 9950X3D2, it's going to be, it will become a 16-core, 32-thread variant, should be positioned as the flagship Zen 5 9000 chip. 200-watt TDP and 192 meg of cache, like I say. It will retain the same base clock, 4.3 gig, but the boost clock will be toned down from 5.6 to 5.5. So a little bit less. To give you a comparison, the 9950X3D regular is 16-core, 32-thread with a boost clock of up to 5.7, 170-watt TDP and only 128 meg of level 3 cache. This is achieved using just one boosted CCD with 64 meg of 3D cache and 32 meg of CCD cache, while the second CCD comes with the standard on CCD 32 meg cache. It gets a bit technical, this, guys, bear with me. But the newer 16 core variant is said to pack an additional 64 meg on the second i2, reaching up to 192 meg of cache, the highest ever on a mainstream desktop CPU. So, if true, and take it with a pinch of salt, this will be the first time that we see a dual 3DV cache option in the Ryzen CPU stack. There have been a couple of prototypes that have popped up every now and again, but nothing's ever made it quite to retail. AMD has recently refuted the possibility of this. They're keeping it close to their chest. They were citing economic concerns as the main reason. But it looks like a little niche might have been created for this type of chip. Probably going to have an MSRP of $700. I wouldn't be surprised if it was $800 as well, to be honest with you. So I do find that pretty interesting here. But before kind of Hans kind of comes on, continues on with the whole AMD AM5 side of things, it'd be rude for us not to remind you that you can come along and join the Discord, because that's where we are. Ask us questions, have a chat about gaming, ask us hardware questions, anything to do with hardware and gaming, really. We could talk about it in the pod. Discord.gg/extremegamingpodcast, or you can literally just search for it on the Googles and you'll find it that way. Keep your eyes out on YouTube for our quick breaks and shorts, mini bite-sized episodes that Craig kindly does and edits together. If you don't want to watch the whole thing, you have some options. And last but not least, we do now have YouTube memberships, which is, you're free to subscribe at any time to YouTube, but the members, there's some perks you get for that. Get some kind of unique badges. You get 24-hour early access to the full video podcast before anyone else. And it starts from $1.99 a month. So that option is cheap. But if it's something you can't do, then just liking and subscribing to the channel helps massively as well. So all good there. So Mr. Hans, yeah, you carry on the whole AMD conversation, please, good sir.
Yes, all right. We're going to tread on dangerous territory now, I guess, when it comes to YouTube. So, or at least I am. No, hey, when I was...
Hold on, Hans. Can you move the microphone a little closer to you?
All right. Is this better?
There you go.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Right. Apologies. Right. So we all own X3D chips. So you boys have the 9950 X3D. I have the 9800 X3D. So I'm going to go back a little bit in time. Remember,
we have bigger PPs. Sorry.
Yeah. yeah. Well, you might be surprised in the end of this one. So, you remember, Gray, when I was talking to you like a few years back, like my problems with the AMD system and the 7800 X3D back at that time, like there was something off, right, about the whole AM5 system back then. So one of the most common perks, of course, with AMDs, we all know about the USB problem, that it's not as bad anymore as an AM4, but it's still there. But my concern was for gaming. I said, there's something about these games that are not fluid, so to speak, right? And, okay, I got the 9800 X3D, a little bit better. And then a few months later, I guess you boys got the 9950 X3D. And remember, like 2 months ago or something when it came out, I said, look, I can run Borderlands without any problems. I really don't have any problems. A lot of people are having problems. I started to check the forums, right? And one thing that came back commonly, or at least in a lot of cases, was I have a 9800 X3D, a 7800 X3D, a 9950 X3D. It's like, is there something going on here? And to make a very long story short, yes, there is something going on with the X3D chips, which I feel that the mainstream techtubers should talk a little bit more about. For disclaimer, once again, this is all about gaming, right? Just purely for gaming I'm talking about. And the X3D chips are not bad chips. Like, just to be clear, right? They're not a waste of money or anything. This is just, you know, my perspective as a gamer and what I discovered going into the underbelly of YouTube and forums and whatever the hell it is. So apparently what happens, right? Let's start with 9950 X3D. It's a dual CCD chip, right? Now, I don't know if you boys did it, but have you ever tested your 1% lows? Especially Jeff, because
Explain to me what 1% lows are, man. I've never fully understood that, and I don't think I actually care about it either, Trev.
Oh, yeah, you will care about it. 1 second, Trev. So, you play at 4K, I guess.
Yes, who cares 1%? Okay.
Yeah, okay. But like, let's say the 1% lows, let's explain this. You got your frame rate, then you got your average frame rate, and you got your 1% lows. So, let's say your frame rate is... Let's take something easy, 150, right? So your average just for the sake of argument, is also 150, so you have a perfect line, right? But then you have the 1% lows. And when you go to the XVD chips, you see that the 1% lows sometimes are like 30 FPS, 7 FPS, 55 FPS, sometimes 70 FPS, depending on where you are and how much needs to be loaded into the V-cache, right? This is going to give another problem later on. So every time you feel a stutter, right? Mostly it's if you go from 150 FPS to 110 FPS, back to 150 in a split second, a little micro stutter, right? We all had those. It's just nothing you can do about it. The thing is, though, with the X3D chips, the 1% lows are going to be a lot lower than even with the Core Ultras from Intel, which I don't know why that is, to be fair. So I did some investigation, contacted a few YouTubers that were actually talking about this problem because, hey, this is something I feel that should be known, right, in the mainstream a little bit, because this could potentially, you know, ruin someone's, you know, buying day. Decisions. Yeah, they also, depending on how much and what you want to buy, right? So what is the problem with the X3D chip, with the dual CCDs? You got two CCDs in there, one gaming and one for all the rest, I guess it is, so to speak, right? So when you actually start up a game, right, what should happen in theory is that it will disable one CCD and then just use the gaming CCD. But that is not really what happens because the scheduler plane doesn't work on those chips. That's a known problem. You can look this up. I will link a few YouTube videos.
They fixed this for the 9000 series. It was tested by J2Sense. They actually managed to fix it so the scheduler 9 times out of 10 works.
J2Sense tested completely wrong. His testing methodology was totally wrong, apparently. So that's another problem with the mainstream tech tubers. So not only J2Sense, they don't do this intentional, by the way, just saying. So it's something that...
Yeah, it's not also like he went out to do it the wrong way.
I honestly didn't believe it at first also, but the deeper you looked into it, it's like, oh my God, we have a little problem here, right? So what happens is, because a scheduler doesn't really work on those chips, you know, the data needs to go through the Infinity Fabric, which is the long way around, so to speak. What happens then is that it can't feed all the data through to the V-cache, which is a problem, which will you know, cause those 1% lows being lower than a lot of other chips. With the 9800X3D, the problem is similar, but in another way. What happens after a while is that the V-cache fills up and it will start to spill over into your system memory. And that is when the problems start to arise. And there's not really a surefire way to test this, right? Like an easy way to test this, so to speak, because again, I'm not a tech tuber. I had to look this up also from a lot of different sources. I even contacted someone about it and he replied to me, but I'll come back to that one later, right? So what happens then is, then the X3D chips kind of fall apart on a certain level, right? Mm-hmm. Not that it's unplayable, so don't worry about it. I mean, oh my, I go from 150 to 110 FPS. Oh, big deal, right? So you still have a lot of FPS over. But it's that microsecond that it does that causes a stutter. And right. I feel that the mainstream tech tubers, right, should have actually investigated this a little bit further, right? But there's a reason they don't do it. And I also understand why they don't do it. Because, first of all, the audience for that maybe isn't really there. Second, there is apparently a little bit of a problem on YouTube when it comes to being negative about AMD, and they of course don't want to lose their audience, which I completely understand, right? They make a living off YouTube, so why not, right? So
Hans, before you go on, tell them the story that you told me before about the algorithm, and that if you choose AMD and put a crown on it.
I actually contacted a YouTuber, but it's a smaller YouTuber, a tech tuber with about 20,000 subscribers. Now, to me, that is not small, but apparently in the big picture, that is small channel. And he said, look, I did a video, AMD versus Intel, right? And if he put the gaming crown on the Intel one, right, his video completely tanked. Did he put it on the AMD one, the crown? For the same video, had a 40% more click-through rate, which is crazy. So I don't know why that is. Is it the audience? I don't know.
No, it's the way YouTube does the algorithm.
Yeah. So I don't know. But the good news is there's also a few fixes for this, right? So if you boys, I know Gray's going to test it at some point. He told me earlier, right? He's going to test this 1% lows. So, and he'll see. If you test it for yourself, you'll see that sadly, you know, those people were right in this one. And there is a way to optimize your CPU. I made a little guide for you boys on how to do it. I will also link a video for there's people that can explain a lot better than me.
We can if it's a document, it's shareable. We can put it in the YouTube description for the video. So
I need to put it a little bit cleaner, so to speak. Now it's very rudimentary. So yeah, right. And I really don't want to make too much mistakes in this one. But what actually happens, you know, in your case, 950X3D, right? If you disable one CCD in the BIOS, right, which is actually disabling half the chip, which is sad, you will get a lot more performance out of your games. Once again, this is for gaming, not content creation, right? Okay. So for gaming, you will see, and I'm not kidding here, sometimes a boost up to 30% if you disable one CCD.
Wow.
And that's not a joke. Now, that's not across the board, depending on the game, but mostly it's around 10 to 30%. It's insane. I linked Gray a small video from a YouTuber with less than 1,000 subscribers, right, who did the actual test himself because he didn't want to believe it. And he did. He did. He went from 300 FPS to about 420 or something in certain games. Now, I understand that in your case, because you also do content creation, that you don't want to just, you know, disable one CCD because you bought it for, you know, the dual CCD because such a good chip for content creation.
Right, was the whole reason. Right?
There's a program out there called Project Lasso where you can actually individually choose what to disable per game. So again, let's say Battlefield 6, you can make a profile there to disable the CCDs. And when you start Battlefield 6, it will disable CCD, the gaming CCD, the non-gaming CCD for that particular game. And when you quit the game, it will just, you know, be the normal 950X3D
again. How long has Lasso been out?
Well, it's a few years. I remember using it years ago for GTA 5 for something different than this, but really long. But it's a program I only used once. It was for GTA 5 way back in the day when it came out on PC. I don't remember what it was for that I used it, but it was the answer to my problem back then. So, but this is something completely different. And my whole gripe with this is, right, so AMD knows this. They have to know this. And they know, right?
Oh, yeah.
They 100% know this, right? That's why I think the X3D2 chips comes into play. Because more V-cache, so it won't spill over as fast. So the dip, so to speak, should be a lot lower.
Yeah.
And that's why one of the reasons
I don't put anything past any company, not just AMD.
No.
Because they all do the same thing all the time.
I agree. But, you know, I want to close off with a positive note, though. I mean, it's not that your chips are bad, right? It's just that the money you pay for those chips, and the same for me with my 980X3D, right? The money you pay for the chips, it should just work. You shouldn't have to do all this crap to get it to perform as it should be.
Of course.
It's the same with the RAM. This whole discussion started when I think Trevor Gray said a 6400 RAM, which by the way is good RAM as an expert profile, so not a big problem, right? But the truth of the matter is that in some cases, right, 6400 RAM will hurt your gaming performance with the 950X3D and the 9800X3D because of the L3 cache spilling over, and
I definitely read some of that. They said that it was performing better at 6,000 than 6,400, which
but the thing is, though,
stupid. But
yeah, I agree. I did that too. When I bought the chips first, I didn't do my research and bought 6600 megahertz RAM. It was actually almost borderline unplayable. So I went back, looked a little bit, got 6,000 RAM, a kit with CL30, you know, the timings, and this works perfectly. Now, I actually had a significant boost in FPS. And when I did the tuning of my X3D chip, right, I went from, I have it open here, the numbers. So this, I think it was TimeSpy. I went from a 29,300 score to 31,700 score after the optimizing and the tuning, which resulted in 6 or 7 FPS, which is not that much. But the 1% lows, right, in Borderlands, went from, let's say, 53 to above 60, which then, once you're above 60 and you're above the threshold, then you're mostly fine. And that is what I'm trying to achieve, you know, with this information.
Yeah. And
I think it's insane to me that so many tech tubers are not talking about this, because remember what we did with Intel when it came out that their chips were burning? yep. growing up. Everybody dogpiled on Intel. And rightly so. And I think AMD should get a little more flack for this one, because at this point, they're kind of duping consumers into buying a high-end chip without telling them, yes, you got the fastest gaming chip, you got the fastest averages, but you got the worst 1% lows, which cause a lot more stutter than the other ones. There's videos out there, and a lot of them, where the Core i7 265, I think it is, from Intel, they have better 1% lows than any X3D chip. And on 4K, this even goes to like 20 or 30 FPS difference. But then again, the average FPS and the highest FPS is a lot higher on the X3D chips. So it's kind of the trade-off. But to be fair, I would personally have less stutters and more smoothness than I have these 1% lows constantly.
Tell me, Hans, why are they actually called 1% lows? Is it because on average you only happen 1% at a time? This is the better
understanding. Yeah, it's the 1% low. Let's say, again, Battlefield 6, easy target, yeah? You start a matchup and you go into hiding somewhere in the bushes, right? Which has a lot more details load at that point. At that point, the L3 cache spills over, right, to your system memory, and it dips. And that's your 1% low. The lowest dip in frame rate is your 1% low. There's also something as 0.1% low, but that's even 0.1%. Extremer. Yeah.
It doesn't happen often, that's why it's named like that, 1% low. It's so infrequent. Yeah.
The point so does that mean
if you're, and I'm the least educated on this than you two, but so that mean if you're in the bush on Battlefield 6, that all of a sudden the plants start stuttering?
Great, nope. you're too old to be in the bush. Behave yourself.
No, but you will see if you have your frame counter on there, right, from your MSI Afterburner, you will see a huge dip in performance all of a sudden, and you go back up. Huge dip again, go back up, and those are called stutters. In best case, those are micro stutters. But in a lot of cases, let's say you play competitive, that micro stutter will get you killed. So I'm not competitive, so for us, it's not that big of a problem.
For competitors, they want the 0.1% to be right.
That's why, actually, I found it interesting that very little competitive players have X3D chips.
Really? Wow, that's
interesting. So they know. Yeah, they know. And which I think is a shame.
They buy the new one.
Yeah, I think it's a shame because I love my X3D chip, and it's the ones you have, the 950 X3D, is a great chip. I think it's the king in multi-threading also, I think, so there is no better one out there. So
yeah, I mean,
as somebody that bought the product like you, how much would it suck that you have to disable half the chip to make it run as it should do in games? That's not right, is it?
No.
There you go. That is my point that I'm trying to make. Right. Not that your chip is
the thing that I think you kind of mentioned it, but I want to make sure that the listeners understand it. The chips that I have and Trev has, 9950 X3D, they're great chips. They really, really do well. However, I also see your side of it, because if you're putting that much money into a chip and these things are happening, that's not right. What gets me even more a little PO'd is that they're coming out with the X3D2. Like a year after we just bought our X3D, and I'm like, come on.
Yeah. And NVIDIA do it all the time.
I'm telling you, this X3D chip is going to have less dips than your
ones. I'm sure
ones
it will.
Because they know. And I think it's such a blatant, I'm not saying lying to consumers, but not being totally honest to consumers.
It's a fabrication.
Like Jensen said, with the 5070, 4090 performance.
Yeah,
with 4x frame gen. So it's technically not a lie, but yeah, you know what I mean, right? So I do hope some people look into this, and I do hope that some more people get aware of this problem so that AMD can actually fix this.
I wonder how much AMD will give me if I trade in my chip now and get an X3D2.
Well, the X3D2 is going to be a beast of a chip, right?
And they're not going to give me anything, I know, but...
To all the audience out there that owns an X3D chip, I own one too, right? There's no problem here. So, it's not like you have to run out to the store and get a new CPU, right? Yeah. It's just saying that there is a problem there with the AM5.
Be aware of it.
Yeah, aware of it.
Exactly.
And if you're a competitive player, you can't really fix the 1% lows. You can get it better, but you will still have the dips. Hence, that I will send you the guide that I made, and I will send you a video with it, with a so-called for dummies explanation, like I need to, right? Well, and just test it out for yourself.
We'll add it to the video podcast description. If you keep your eyes on it, guys, if you want to tweak it yourself. So
And yeah, just try it out and see if I'm wrong or not. And if I'm wrong, I'll come back here and eat crow.
And let us know how you got on. Just go to the Discord and put a comment in there. Let us know how you got on. All right. Thank you, Mr. Hans, for that. It was a pretty interesting opinion article, that one. Mr. Gray, some gaming news, I believe.
Yeah. In fact, I got a lot of gaming news. Some of it's very interesting, too. First story I want to bring up, only because, I don't know, people might accuse me of making too much fun of Starfield, but I'm sorry. I mean, I can't help it. When I was looking forward to Starfield and I got the garbage they put out, I'm just not letting them get away from it. So now you start seeing these articles popping out with people that worked on the game or maybe aren't employed by Bethesda anymore, so they can come out and say whatever they want. So apparently one of the designers came out and said that it's definitely not the same caliber as Fallout and Elder Scrolls. They said it was full of procedural generation. They said the planets were all very samey. No kidding. And on top of that, that's bad enough. Okay. So and we're getting the admitting part that this is happening. This guy's name was Bruce Nesmith, and he said that Starfield's infamous thousands of planets might as well be empty, he says. That's pretty bad.
Starfield until this day is still one of my biggest disappointments.
Yeah, definitely. We talked about this on a past show, and y'all can, listeners out there can look it up. But basically, the thing that really got me mad, this is one of them, yes. The other thing was that just the characters themselves look like crap. They look like they're not much better than what came out on Skyrim years ago. They really weren't that much more advanced. They didn't look that much better. They definitely didn't react. It was just kind of like they're facing forward.
Have you beat the game? I've barely played it, so I've still to get around to it.
I played it for maybe about 15%, 20% of the game, and I couldn't take it anymore.
Wow, really?
I wanted to play it. I wanted to like it, and I'm just going like, I can't
apparently
do it
the
anymore.
First DLC was a bit disappointing as well.
Yeah, I'm checking my Steam now. I played it for 47 hours, but I didn't complete it. It was so boring.
So you didn't have it on Game Pass then? Hans, no?
No, I bought the collector's edition. The physical one.
Oh, with the watch. Yeah, I remember now.
With the watch inside. The watch is pretty cool, though. But on a little side note, I have now modded my Starfield into a completely other game, a Star Wars RPG, which I will talk about in a later podcast.
I heard that's really good.
It's really good. And I'm going to, when I finish it, I'm going to talk about it on the podcast because you should really do this.
Yeah. So, I think I'm going to because I've heard nothing but good stuff about it.
You can use my Nexus Mods premium account to download the stuff, so don't worry.
This goes back to, I know we say it a lot in this show, but modders to the rescue again. I mean, Jesus.
Absolutely.
I mean, they don't get paid diddly, and they just sit there and, boom, create something much better.
This is a completely different game now, with all the Star Wars music, voice lines, whatever you can come up with. It's insane how detailed that mod, it's a collection of mods, is. It's crazy.
By the way, on that same line, mod corner or not, there was a guy that put out a video that he's been working on what they call Elder Gleam. Elder Gleam is something he's been working on for years, and he's going to be coming out with Elder Gleam 4. Well, actually, Elder Gleam 4 is actually out, but they're waiting on the Elder Gleam Unlimited or whatever they call it, Ultra. So I saw a little video on this, and the thing that always kept me from doing this with Skyrim is that literally in this mod or mods, there's 1,600 mods. Now, in order to sit there and put that together, it's quite annoying, okay? So what he did finally is now the technology's moved along, he's got it down to a single-click installer. So this thing will just download and install everything exactly the way it's supposed to be. And if you've seen the video, and I'll try to put a little piece of the video in here on the video podcast portion, it looks really good. So I'm really thinking about now that he's got it down where I don't have to screw around with 1,600 mods, I can go ahead and load it in and go back and play Skyrim, which would be cool. He also has a Discord, so they said, with the people that have worked on this. And if you have any problem at all, you just go there. And they said because now it's more uniform and everybody's doing the same thing, it's much easier to troubleshoot because they're all just on the same page now instead of all over the place. So look it up, people, because it's pretty cool. And I, like I said, I will try to put the video in here on our video podcast. One of the things a guy said about Starfield 2 that I thought was pretty funny, he goes, he says, space is inherently boring. It's literally described as nothingness. So moving throughout that isn't where the excitement is.
That's not an excuse, is it? It's a game.
I love what true he story. Said. That, but attention, I mean, basically that is true. I mean, even when the astronauts went to the moon many years ago, the trip between Earth and the moon wasn't the most exciting thing in the world. It was cool, and they could see things for the first time, don't get me wrong, but there's big chunks of that trip where nothing was going on. Yeah. They're just gliding through, you know.
Can imagine if you had an Xbox Ally handheld back then, or a Switch 2 or something to keep you occupied in the long trip. Oh, that's maybe what they'll have to do now. Imagine that you go to Mars or something, we'll whip out my Switch 4 or something by then.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see them all just sitting there playing on it. Well, you know, the new SpaceX Dragon, right?
Yeah.
All their controls are touchscreens. So all you got to do is program a game in
there. You could easily do it. You'd be like, hands trying to beat like Elden Ring 5 or something, but then, right? And you've actually got to like recycle the air filtration system. Nah, I'm on this last boss. You just choked to death in the crash, man.
I wouldn't dare. Are you docking with the space station? You go like, are you looking at what you're doing?
You're paying attention, and you grab the wrong. Agree. You grab the wrong control stick because there's one for docking and another one for the.
You push it forward, and all of a sudden, bam!
Oh. So, Gray deorbited the ISS a little bit too early now.
I didn't mean to. The funny thing is that also I was reading here, it says 2 years in, 2 years, Bethesda answers player. We think Bethesda answers players' hopes and says it's improving Starfield space travel. Part of the team has been focused on space gameplay to make the travels there much more rewarding. Me, I'm sitting there going like, it's 2 years in. I don't care anymore. Don't sit there and make anything improved. It's shit. Just leave it alone.
It's
you know, the only thing it's good for now is the Star Wars mod. Other than that,
absolutely.
You don't need to be using it.
Crazy, absolutely.
Man. Absolutely, yeah. Crazy. Anyway, to move on a little bit, this is. I'm sorry. I think this is the title of this article is one of the most funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
The quadruple A studio, Gray. Let's not forget.
Yes, this is pathetically funny. Title. This is the title. Ubisoft asks devs at Star Wars Outlaw Studio to lay themselves off. I mean, just think about that for a second.
There is a reason for that one, is it?
No, I understand, but it's just so stupid. It just sits and goes, hey, listen, just lay yourself off. We don't have time to do it for you.
They will get a severance package or whatever it's called, no?
I understand that, but that is just too funny, man. I'm sorry. Well,
the thing is, though, if you don't take the severance package, you could get fired in a few weeks anyway, just take it. Just take it. I mean,
right, so they have them pretty much by the neck, because if they don't think the package is worth it, then they'll never get a job in town again.
So what, you know, is it voluntary redundancy?
Yeah,
then,
they asked them to voluntarily lay themselves off as part of the French publisher's latest cost-cutting restructuring. You know, they go to support this transition. This is corporate speak. Now watch this. To support this transition responsibly, we introduced a voluntary career transition program. Giving eligible team members the opportunity to take their next career step on their own terms, supported by a comprehensive package that includes financial and career assistance. But if you really read between the lines, they're sitting there going like, says, you're fired no matter what you say. We'll just give you a little couple bucks to make you happy and don't talk
Translation,
about it.
Here's money, now get away.
That's right. Shocking. Here's money, shut up, and don't talk to any reporters. I mean, give me a break. Yeah. They said the cuts come as Ubisoft shifts its management structure under a new deal with Chinese conglomerate Tencent, which has been a big deal because all their IPs, their good IPs, have gone to Tencent, and they're just basically laying off people left and right everywhere else. So
I'm sorry. I mean,
it's only going to be good if the new Vantage Studios can actually put out a great game. I'm not going to say yes or no. I'll give it a chance, but boy, if their first game, let's say it's whatever, whether it's Assassin's Creed or Far Cry or whatever, when it comes out, if it's not really good, man, they're going to be raked over the coals big time.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's bad now, it'll be much worse before. They said that basically the studio is going to remain focused on, I love this, promised content within the Division universe. The Division 2, the Division 2 Survivors, the Division Resurgence, and eventually Division 3, like 28
eventually.
Years.
That's the word in there, isn't it?
20 years from now, maybe. Hey, look, like, they're lucky Division 2 is such a good game that it's held up all these years, but that's not an excuse to not do 3, you know? I mean, but whatever.
It's like the thing you linked in Discord about Elder Scrolls 6 7 years ago, the announcement trailer. Yeah.
Just thought, I was so pissed off when I saw that. I'm pissed off anyway, but when I saw that, I just see it going like 20 million views 7 years ago, and I'm like, geez.
Isn't Good or Evil 2 longer? Without any news, if I remember, almost 10 or 15 years now, I guess. I don't know.
Well, not to knock the game, but no one cares as much about that as they
true.
Do.
True. No, that's true. That's true. Yeah,
you know, so, you know, but it's such a common joke now that everybody just goes like, yeah, it'll come out. Mm-hmm, okay. You know, the Star Citizen will come out with 1.0 way before Elder Scrolls.
Well, you're taking it too far now.
No, I'm not so sure about that, dude. I am not so sure about that.
Yeah. Could be. Interesting discussion, by the way, that one between those two games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
At least Star Citizen you can play.
True. And it's better playable now than it used to be. So, I mean, Matt tells
also
us.
Also true.
Anyway. All right. Next one was leaning on PlayStation a little bit. That's more of a Trev thing. But, hey, you know, we all cover crap. Anyway, the former PlayStation independent dev or whatever said that the PS5 has made almost every game a better game. This is his quote. But suggests graphics have hit a point where you can't tell the difference anymore. And Sony can't keep increasing the graphics power with new consoles.
I heard about this, yeah.
Now, at face value, you would think like, well, what are they talking about? They can always do something. But then again, you think about it, it's like, again, we go back to the average player, or maybe the slightly higher average player, and they ain't seeing this stuff. They don't really care, to be honest.
To be fair, The Witcher 3 is 10 years old, looks better than 90% of the games that came out this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's aged well, hasn't it?
I think, though, that, you know, real graphics improvements kind of hit their limit in, like, 2016, 2017, right? There's improvements to ray tracing and lightning, but there's nothing actually, how do I say this, mind-bogglingly new, so to speak. That's like, whoa, this is next evolution in graphics, right?
Yeah.
They tried it with ray tracing, didn't really catch on. And to be fair, if you show people ray tracing, there's very few games where you can actually tell that ray tracing is on or off.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, though, by the way, ray tracing. But a lot of people just don't care about it.
Same
especially
thing with
on consoles.
Path tracing. I mean, I think it's cool to have in the game, but most, you know, 90% of the players are going to go like, what?
Yeah, but
that's the way it's going to go in the future, because as he says, like, you can't, Moore's Law is dead when it comes to that side of things, the graphics and whatnot. So you can't keep doubling the power or even increasing the power by a big load every time. That's why they try to find other niches to make things different.
Yeah. There's only one field where doubling the power and tripling the power is happening now, and that's AI. We already know this. And even though I've said it more than once over the last, you know, months or seven, you just wait, because AI is going to be a GPU card, and there will not be anything. Everything will be programmable. You're not going to have half the shit in it. It's just not going to happen. Anyway,
more fake.
So this guy, Shuhai Yoshida.
That's pretty good.
Said it's gotten to a point where people can't tell the difference between frame rates or whether a game is using ray tracing, saying graphics are facing an impasse, which is kind of what we've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting that a guy like him would actually come out and say that, because technically you would not let somebody say that because it could hurt sales.
True. You know. I kind of disagree on the frames. Right, I mean, you can absolutely tell 30 frames from 60 and 120 and 240. Even console players can do that. I mean, I still think it's really weird that in 2025 some games need to run at 30 FPS. It's to me, that's crazy. So
the thing that I liked about this is, so somebody asked him, they said, well, what can Sony do differently moving forward? And he said, I don't know.
Up the power to get 60 FPS as a baseline? That's the start?
Yeah, exactly. But it was funny. He goes, I don't have an answer for that.
He's not wrong, though. So.
Anyway, now this next article, I think you guys are going to be real interested in. I was a little shocked when I read some of this stuff. The title is, over 5,000 games released on Steam this year didn't make enough money to recover the $100 fee to put a game on Valve Store, the research estimates.
Is that how much it costs? $100 for every game? $100 to put a game on? Really?
Well, when you read further into the article, if you pay a $100 fee, if your game makes $1,000, you're refunded the $100. So basically what they're saying is 5,000 games never even made it to $1,000.
But to be fair, whose fault is that?
Well, I'm not saying there's not a fault. It's just unusual to be reading some of this stuff.
It is true, but I mean, there are some really crap games on Steam, right?
Oh, of course, right. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, a few years ago, I mean, like 10 years ago now, somebody on the podcast here gifted me Shower with Your Dad Simulator. I was like, what?
Oh, that's
really good.
That's really good. I've completed that multiple times and got a platinum as well.
So it's crazy that these games exist.
You know what that reminds me of? There was
to be fair, bad example was that game
Matt,
made.
Matt will have played it.
A crap ton of money, but okay.
it reminds me of how they pull wool over your eyes in a way. But there was a SpongeBob episode one time where this guy was at a TV studio and he was trying to make them fail. And they said, I got an idea how I can make them fail, and I'll talk them into it. So what he does is he puts a jar of mayonnaise on a table with a knife in it or whatever, like someone's going to use it. And then they just put the camera on there, and that's all they did. They let it roll silently on this jar of mayonnaise, and they all go, it's one of the most amazing things we've ever seen. It's pathetic. It's this, it's that. I'm like, I'm cracking up, going like,
oh, dear.
It's a big hit, you know, number one. And like, wow.
Oh, man.
Anyway, listen to some of these numbers. Valve Store has seen nearly 13,000 game launches since January 1st of this year. 13,000. And we're not even done with the year yet.
Yeah. So Steam is by far the biggest gaming platform.
Oh, yeah. He says the majority of those games went straight under the couch should be forgotten for the rest of time.
Agree?
Yep.
Definitely. A couple of the other numbers. Oh, yeah, look at this. 8% of the releases are estimated to have grossed over $100,000. Only 8% to make $100,000, let alone anything else, right?
Well,
40% didn't see a return on their $100 release cost. 40% didn't see jack.
So no sales then.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I mean.
It says here. Let's see it also shows that the bottom 30% of games, by revenue, averaged $37 in gross.
Yeah,
37. Bottom
30. I may not make a game then. This sounds like an expensive endeavor.
Don't be going out there to try to make a game. We're not done yet. Listen to this. 65.9% of 2025 Steam releases to date earned less than $1,000 in revenue. So 65% of these 13,000 games made less than $1,000. 47.4% are estimated to have sold under 100 copies, with 28% estimated between 100 and 1,000 copies. So that means if you put the 47 plus the 28, you're getting what, 75? So you're talking like somewhere around 75% have only sold maybe 1,000 copies, if that, 100 to 1,000.
Yeah.
That's all.
But yeah, well, if so many games released, then yeah, it's crazy.
I'm just surprised. I'm not a hunt. I'm just, these numbers are staggering when you really look at it.
Let's hope my Belgian friends that make a game then do it correctly.
Don't show them this article. Whatever.
No, I won't. You got in contact with him, so don't show it to him.
No one's gonna want to do anything after this, man. This is gonna be like, oh my god. I mean, I knew there had to be something like that, but I didn't realize to the extent that I saw in that article. I was like, wow. Anyway, that's my game news for now.
Appreciate it, Mr. Gracie. That didn't take as long as you thought it would, to be fair. Right, a little less gaming news from me, but nevertheless, these are kind of two pretty big articles, to be fair. I'll start with the one that's slightly less bigger, in my opinion, and I'm not surprised by this one. The Simpsons is reportedly coming to Fortnite. and it will include an entire Springfield map. Now, I'm not a fan.
Because of course they are.
I'm not a fan of this game. It's not for me, but I have to respect the hell out of the job Epic have done and keeping it fresh and updating it, and it's still free to play, and every kid just wants V-Bucks for their Christmas or their birthday. This is hilarious to be... I mean, I saw it in COD a lot where you go about with like Beavis and Butthead skins, which is a bit silly. Or I've got... Yeah, my main skin is Master Splinter. I'm cutting about with a AK as Master Splinter. It's hilarious, but it's got to be done. So this game here...
better than Beavis and Butthead.
You could be cutting about as Maggie. That's the baby, isn't it? With a gun or whatever. That'll be hilarious. There'll be skins there, of course. There'll be a map. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the nuclear power plant, and that's what melts down because a big giant Homer Simpson that sort of wrecks everything. I find this cool. I don't even know if I would check it out because I don't even have the game installed. I might do. But here's the thing, boys. It's been 18 years since there's been a Simpsons game, and I loved the Simpsons game back in the day. I remember playing that in arcades and everything.
The arcade one to beat them up. I used to released in
2007. If you remember, it was the one where you could get four people on an arcade machine with their own joystick and buttons each, and it was impossible to get to the end. I loved that game, but you can't buy it now. You can't because of a license thing. It was never available. It was available on console digitally briefly during the Xbox 360 era. Then it disappeared. You can't get it now.
Emulation.
You know, with Fortnite, to put it in perspective, everybody's heard the words cash cow. It's just you're making money like can over fist. They have a cow. They have a cash herd.
Yeah,
not a cash cow, a cash herd.
I mean, and the game's not for me, but money. Credits to them. I mean, they keep milking it.
So. Oh yeah,
and it works. So
I think they've done that's been really smart, and I only realized this when I bought the K-pop, girls because of my granddaughter. Was that they actually have made a separate mini game within the game that is tailored towards whatever it is. In this case, with the K-pop, you're fighting the demons like they do in the movie. And they never used to do that because they would just sit there and make the skin and you would have the person and that's cool and that's it. Like, for instance, when I bought the alien skin, it's kind of cool running around as an alien. But there wasn't any mini game to support the alien. You just were the alien. I bought the Terminator package, and I was the Terminator. There's no mini game to support that either. You just look cool. But this actually has something. And like Trev just said, now they're building a map, and I'm going like, okay. They didn't do a lot of this stuff before. So now it's a whole nother cash cow of a different kind.
Yeah. It makes a lot of money. This game makes them a lot of money. If you're interested in it, the game is free, bear in mind. Including the themes as well for Simpsons, it'll be free as well. It's out November the 1st, so go the rumors. And the map itself will be cel shaded, keeping in line with the art style of the Simpsons. So that's even hilarious because I consider Fortnite kind of cel shaded. It's not cel shaded, but it's a bit cartoony. It's not like up to date state of the art graphics, if that makes sense. So I consider it a little bit cel shaded, but it's. So that'll be cool. I might check out because that could be funny, even though I'm not really into those kind of games. The other thing that happened, and people were titling this as Xbox is dead. That's it. Long live Xbox. And that is the last big major stumbling block of franchise games between the two consoles has come to an end with Halo Campaign Evolved coming to PlayStation 5 next year. Now, this is the very first game, basically getting a remake to bring it up to modern standards, to tweak it for... It's going to be available on, I think it was PlayStation and Xbox and PC. Yeah, I don't PC, think there's any, there's nothing about a Switch 2 launch, but now what they're doing is they're basically going to Unreal Engine 5 because they were on that Slipspace or whatever engine they were using before. And while it looked good, the problem is... Halo Infinity kind of bombed a little bit because you were having to get people into the studio, train them up on how to work this engine that no one else used outside the Halo studios and teach them how to use it, so they were always way, way behind. It wasn't practical. So moved to an engine that a lot of people in the industry know, and that's Unreal Engine 5. Sure, it'll cost them a bit more, but I saw a little sneak peek of it, and it's the first level, essentially, and it does look good. But, I mean, the first game, the original game looked good. I remember playing that on the original Xbox when I was at uni, playing that with my friends, staying up too late when we should have been studying, but we're like at the very end, if you remember the end, when you're in the like the buggy thing and you're racing towards the end of the platform or the ship or whatever it is while shooting, one guy's shooting and the other guy's driving. I remember us playing that and then celebrating at the end. It was so good. Halo 1, 2 and 3 were enjoyable, and then after that it got a bit samey, it got a bit too much. I never played anything after that. Halo Infinity I thought was very average. Their multiplayer is still online, but it's not massively successful. So I reckon this is just a way to get money back in. They're obviously this thing between Sony and Microsoft's basically coming in because Microsoft want money more than anything else. So they're like, okay, we'll just bring out all our games on other platforms. And that's a good way to go about it because they will earn a shit ton of money that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hey, look, you know I mean?
I'm always for remakes if they're done well.
If they're done well.
I mean, yeah. Well. And yeah. I was impressed, like you were saying, Trev, I saw the trailer, but then I wanted to see gameplay, and they did release something like a 10-minute or 14-minute gameplay video, and I watched it, and I was like, wow, I mean, it really did look pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, if it's that good, I'm actually looking forward to playing it, you know, looking good now and looking.
Well, we won't pay for it because we'll get the Xbox Game Pass, so it'll be on that one. Yeah. It'll come to us as well. It's next year at some point, we don't know when. Mm-hmm. Just said next year. Hopefully we get it before PlayStation. I think that's only fair. But they want to make as much money as possible. Sony are just going to stick to the exclusives, and that's how they'll compete and make money as well. Everyone wins. But we do need Xbox to continue making consoles and games because it's competition at the end of the day. So yeah, that's all I've got on that end there. You have a quick first impression on an interesting survival horror game, Mr. Hans.
Well, it's not a first impression because I completed the game and the DLC.
Oh, you finished it now.
Yeah,
right,
in under 8 hours, by the way, but that's a different discussion. Okay. So this was actually something I have a kind of a giant wish list on Steam, right? And then Steam tells you which of your wish list games are on sale. And on there was Still Wakes the Deep, which is a survival horror game by an English studio. And I was like, okay, the premise is you're on an oil rig and something happens and, you know, that's a game. So, okay, I bought it. And indeed, it is what it says. It's an oil rig off the coast of Scotland. You play as a real Scottish dude called Cas McGreery, or whatever you say it.
Not Hamish. Oh, it's disappointing.
I think there's an option in the game for that Gaelic or something.
Gaelic, the local language some people speak. You won't understand
anything they say at that point.
Oh no, I needed the subtitles for it.
It's a completely different language, Gray. You wouldn't unless you spoke the language.
Oh, I know. I heard it. It's just like what?
Let's just say that Scots have some real interesting terminology for some stuff.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, so the game starts as you working on an oil rig, and indeed, during the drilling, they hit something happens. Uh-huh. And, you know, how do I explain this without spoilers?
Is it based on a TV show on Amazon Prime called The Rig?
No, I watched that,
and that is the same idea. It's fantastic.
It's in Christmas 1975. That's actually the time that it plays out. So, and you play as Cass then, and of course you want to get off the boat get off the oil rig as soon as possible, right?
Yep.
And this is actually the game where you make your way through the whole oil rig to do all kinds of stuff to prevent it from sinking and all that kind of things. You can't fight in this game. So there's no fighting.
I'm out.
Yeah. So you need to hide, duck, cover, whatever. So to, you know,
it sounds
avoid
like
you.
Alien, the Alien yeah. game. Isolation.
Alien Isolation. True. Yeah. So what happens to your crew members, they have been transformed into this gelatinous blob monsters that, you know, now roam on the oil rig. And to be fair, though, the game is actually pretty good. The story is really well written.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actual sense of dread in the game. You don't know what is going on, and you also don't really uncover it until pretty late in the game. And It's actually a genuinely good survival horror game, kind of a hidden gem. But there's a downside to this also, because when you complete the main game, you can go to the DLC. The DLC is actually 10 years later. It's called Siren's Rest. And then you play as the daughter of one of the crew members, and you dive to the wreck. So, and some more things are uncovered there. And that's about all I can say without spoiling the whole game. Now, the thing is, though, I got the game on a sale. I paid about €18 for the base game and the DLC. And the total gameplay time was about 8.5 hours, so under 9 hours. Now, the normal price of the game is $34.99 for the base game and $12.99 for the DLC, which, in my opinion, is pretty steep for what you get. Now, graphics-wise, it's really good. There's ray tracing, there's HDR, there's even ultrawide support, so there's nothing about the game that I can say that is bad, except for the price. But if you like survival horror games, and I think actually Trev would really love this because it's actually based in Scotland, right?
That's right.
Yeah, truly. I asked Trev a question about a football team, which indeed turned out to be a Partick Thistle or something. Yeah. So I had to look it up. And sorry?
The Jags, that's their nickname.
Okay, I didn't know that one, so cool.
I did talk to one person that played the game. I'll just play his reaction.
Welcome to all things Scottish. Our slogan is, if it's no Scottish, it's crap!
Well, to be fair, the game is not crap. The game is not crap, so it must be Scottish then. So,
that's funny.
It's just... The terminology of words that they use in the conversation, just it's so hilarious sometimes.
There's also subtitles to understand it. It's a unique humor.
Yeah. You need
Trev sent me, I forget what it was, Trev, but Trev sent me a clip of these different Scottish comedians that were all doing a skit or whatever. And I thought it was funny as hell, and I only understood about 60% of it.
Was that the
one with the Borg in Star Trek?
I think that one. Yeah.
But and, yeah, it's the Borg on the phone for you.
Well, I purposely didn't want to watch it with the captions first, so I watched it the first time, and I loved it, even though I couldn't understand about 40% of it. Then I put the captions on, and then I liked it just as much or more because I kept on looking down to see, like, what the hell is he saying? And then I could see what he's saying. I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it.
The reason that game that Hans plays sounds fascinating and interesting is because, like I said a moment ago, it seems very similar to a TV show that's now 2 seasons deep on Prime Video called The Rig. And it's set on a oil rig off the north coast of Scotland, and it involves really primeval things that lived on the ocean floor. Like, think of the Abyss, but with Scots in it. that's the best way of describing it. And all kinds of shit happened, man. It's mad. It's like a horror type drama, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, this one is more Lovecraftian horror. Right? That's the best way I can describe it. So
More artistically horror
it is,
or whatever.
And the horror is great in the game. I'm just saying the only downside to the game is the price. If you can get it on a good sale, please do, because you're actually missing out, if you're a horror fan, that is. You're missing out on a great game.
I wonder if that game made $1,000 like we just read about.
Oh, yeah. I think it has like 7,000 reviews, so there's no worries there.
Okay, there you go.
That's amusing.
Speaking of that, as a side note, you know the Escape from Duck Off I talked about before, the ducks, right?
Yeah.
I think it's already gotten up to 1 million copies sold.
Crazy.
And I'm like, holy moly. You know, and I did see that they are going to, not yet, but they are going to put out an update that you can use a controller, because it's almost impossible.
Gray, why are you not talking about this? Why are you not talking about this more? You've played it, and I thought you would be talking more about this game and how well it's outsold. What did it outsell? Battlefield? I'm sure it did.
Probably.
Battlefield sticks at Battlefield 6 at one stage.
I thought it was going to do okay, but I didn't. That was like, whoa. And then, mental. I mean, I liked what little bit I played. Man. I just couldn't control it. It was freaking nuts.
By the way, so speaking of games that shouldn't make $1,000, I just got gifted a game like an hour ago. I just saw it now, called Save Daddy Trump 4 MAGA 2024. What the hell? Why am I being gifted this game, man?
No.
I just got a gift. I got a real life friend, and he gives me these most ridiculous games that he can find. And my Steam library is so messed up sometimes. If you see the titles that are in, it's like, oh my god.
Well, you have to start like organizing it and putting all those games into one.
Yeah, I do that. So it's crazy. The amount of crap games save Daddy Trump. I mean, come on.
So do you recommend the DLC as well then for the game fans? Yeah.
Yeah. The DLC is actually a perfect add-on to the main game. Right. The DLC is only about 2 hours long. Again, it's not long, so the main game is 4 to 6 hours. I play pretty slowly. But the game is genuinely good. I don't want to spoil the game for people that want to play it, so it is a really good survival horror game.
Okay.
It's just on the short side, it's an indie game, great visuals, just the price is too much.
Yeah, I agree.
So you've got to get it on a sale. So
I'll wait until it goes in a good sale, I think. Put it on a wish list or something, you know. So.
Yeah. Try it out.
Okay, man. Cheers for that, Hans. And last but not least, a couple of bits of tech news from Gray.
Yep. I checked out a couple things, and I thought some of this might be interesting. Apparently, MSI has brought out their beta. It's a beta version of an AI-powered easy PC builder. But it kind of doesn't work that great yet, which is, I guess, why it's beta. But some of the things were very interesting. The author of the article said he started out by telling it that he wanted to build a PC for 4K gaming, to which it asked me what CPU I would prefer, AMD or Intel. And I go,
So yeah,
it's supposed to really just tell you, but now they're asking him which chip you want. Like, okay. So he started to kind of play dumb just to see what else, you know, what would happen. He said it doesn't have access to pricing information. That doesn't sound good. In the same way that something like Newegg would. So Newegg has an AI-powered beta PC builder, which apparently is better. The other thing that I thought was funny, too, is they said that because it was made by MSI, guess what components it suggested?
MSI?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good MSI components. I got a godlike board right here, but I think that's pretty funny. You sit there, like, supposedly you're supposed to recommend, you know, whatever is the best, but it's kind of like, not in this one, you're not.
That's funny.
Yeah, he mentioned, he said, I mean, I'd fall out of my chair if it suggested, say, an Asus motherboard over an MSI. But he said the bias limits the end user benefits. And I said, yeah, I guess a little bit.
Yeah.
He said the MSI tool only has a rough idea of pricing, not an up-to-date list. Again, it's beta, so, you know, cut it some slack, I suppose. He asked it to spec out an AMD budget build. And it said you're going to give him an AMD Ryzen 7 9800X3D.
Budget.
The same chip it picked for the 4K mega build. In fact, that's the one that's currently retailing for $460. So he responded, that's a very expensive CPU for a low build, right? He says, he said the AI comes back and says, you're absolutely right. And he says, it's definitely not a budget friendly, but they just told him to use it in a budget friendly, you know, and that's stuff hilarious. Like that. He goes, you're absolutely right. My apologies. The AI says, I'm like, okay. Then it went on from there to get something more suitable for a low end build. So,
yeah.
Like pretty funny though. When you're sitting there, you know, it's wrong and it's just telling you this stuff, but imagine if somebody used it that didn't really know better. They'd be doing all this stuff and turning out with a system that's pretty wonky.
At
the very least, right?
It's an interesting article.
This next article I think is going to take a little bit for us to talk about, which I think is going to be very cool because I'm really interested in your opinions about this. I thought this was fascinating. This article starts out with 5 specs that I'm ignoring the next time I build a gaming PC.
Right.
Okay. And we'll go through them all and see what you guys think about this. Okay, the first thing he brings up is he says, monitor peak brightness. And he says, the peak of misleading marketing.
No.
So he says,
I'm just saying.
He said, the actual 100% window brightness will often be only 20 to 30% of the peak brightness figure. The number is what truly shows how bright your monitor will look during a game or movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what he's saying is it's not that the monitor wouldn't be good or bad or whatever. It's just that they fudge on the types of statistics that they give you when they measure this thing. So you really don't always know, you know, what it truly is. So he basically thinks that that's, you know, that's just an abuse, you know, basically to sit there and talk about it. Especially when you spend $1,000 on a monitor. Or
no, just no. He's wrong.
It's nuts.
He's wrong.
I'm not saying wrong or no. Right or whatever. I'm just reading it. I told you this would be interesting.
You need to do more research.
Okay. Now, the next thing he says is motherboard Wi-Fi 7. Out of 6 useless features on your motherboard, this should be the 7th.
Oh, God.
And he goes, Wi-Fi 6E already achieves everything PC users need from a wireless network, and Ethernet is still the preferred solution anyway. He's got a point.
Yep, I agree.
Paying extra for a motherboard with Wi-Fi 7 is absurd. By the time Wi-Fi 7 routers become affordable and commonplace, you might already have upgraded your motherboard to something else. And get this, the Wi-Fi 8 specifications are already being worked on.
I kind of agree with him on that.
I mean, I didn't buy my Godlike because it had Wi-Fi 7. It does, but that definitely wasn't one of the reasons I bought it.
A quick follow-up question. Has either of you ever put Wi-Fi 7 as like a criteria to buy a motherboard?
Because we're hardcore bit of tech, and you always have a wired connection. But the only thing that I've got that can actually use Wi-Fi 7 is my PS5 Pro, which is hilarious because it's actually faster than the Ethernet port because it's only 1 gig by default. So it's hilarious that the Wi-Fi 7 in that is quicker, but I have no router to connect to. So
I mean, what's the point?
When I bought my motherboards, including this one, I could care less whether it had wireless at all. I mean, I'm hot wiring in with Cat 6, you know, at a gig. So I'm like,
I didn't even look at that spec when I bought my motherboard.
Gray, your router must be in your room that you're in this now with a PC. Yeah, I guess the router.
No. My router basically, remember, it's fiber, so it's 1G up and down. Yeah. It's sitting in another room right now. And then what I did is I have a switch hooked up to it. And the switch routes into a panel that leads all the cables that I had wired through my house to different areas around the house. So in my room here with the computer, I then have another switch, another Netgear switch. And in that switch, I bring it out to the computer and whatever else I need. And I don't lose any speed because it's wiring. Yeah, I mean it's just fast. Especially if it's Cat 6 cable. I did not want to go 5E. When I knew I was doing this,
you've got to stick to 6 at least. You can get away with 5E sometimes, but I would stick to 6 and above for sure.
Yeah. I also heard that Cat 7's coming now pretty soon.
If it's not already out, but it's not required, man. It's way overkill, and it's more for business than anything else. But it's nice to know that we're keeping up with the times, you know.
Now, the next thing here, I admit I don't know a whole lot about this. You guys probably know a little bit more. But anyway, he said this next useless thing is motherboard number of VRM phases.
No!
Board vendors... it says board vendors will sell you anything. So he says, VRM, by the way, I forgot what it stood for. Was it...
Your VRM is on your motherboard. Don't worry about it.
He says if a 16-phase VRM with a terrible heatsink can't keep itself from throttling during an all-core test, it's a useless motherboard.
Okay, no, he's got a small point there. That's why you need to do research, right? Now, high-end motherboards typically will have a good VRM cooling, right? So don't worry too much about that one. But there are like, let's say AMD, the B series motherboards, right? If you go to the lower end B series, that's when you can get into problems. So what he's saying, I think, is if you buy like you guys 9950 XVD and buy a cheap ass motherboard, then you are in trouble.
That's silly. Buy at least a decent motherboard.
I think that's what he means, right? I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's what he means.
For our fans out there, a VRM is voltage regulator module.
What did I say? Variable refresh rate.
That's why I said don't worry about it.
He goes on to say, and I'm not going to pretend I understand all this, but says, for simplicity, 12 true phases, no phase doubler nonsense, with 60 amp, 70 amp power stages, and quality finned heat sinks are all that most gamers ever need. Mm-hmm. Enthusiasts can go for 16 phase VRMs with power stages rated over 70 amp. So that's his final quote.
He's right, but the cooling needs to be on par. So yeah. He has half a point, in my opinion, in this one. So
he didn't do good. He's got no point, 1 point, half point.
Like, yeah, half point in this one for me. So.
All right, now here comes one that I can sympathize with him some on. I think we all can a little bit. But he goes, GPU, AI tops, top of the AR marketing fluff list. So what does he do? He puts a picture in here when what's-his-name said that the 59, he was going to have 40-70 performance of a 59, whatever, anyway. And he says, you'll be forgiven for not knowing what tops really is. After all, NVIDIA is more excited about it than any gamer ever will be.
Wow.
Tops, yeah, or trillions of operations per second, is a theoretical metric of the AR performance of a GPU or CPU. Tops might matter to professionals or enthusiasts, but all gamers care about is a generational uplift. That's true. I mean, that's what we would like to see it, you know. Instead of going into, this is something that Trevin mentioned a couple weeks ago. Instead of going into the rasterization gains over the RTX 40 series, NVIDIA spent most of the time marketing its multi-frame generation feature and how its AI innovations led to it. When third-party benchmarks unveiled the downsides of AI-generated frames on such a scale, no one cared about AI tops. Everyone criticized the lack of generational gains and the deceptive marketing. So I give him a point for all that. That makes sense.
It makes sense to some degree. I get what he means in this one. I mean,
shoot back against him. What don't you like about that?
No, I mean, we as gamers, right, we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's plain and simple. I mean, if you have a 50 series card and you hear all this buzz about multi-frame generation, which in my opinion has failed, multi-frame generation, right? It has failed as a technology because once you go over two, it kind of literally falls apart. So who cares about frame generation? And then you got your tops and your ROPs and all that kind of stuff. No gamer cares about that. All we care about is how much performance uplift do I have over my current card. So, and what NVIDIA did, they played it like both ways. They played a little bit to gamers like, here's a 5070, 4090 performance, boys. You know, with all the AI crap in there. So, he has a point, though. Yeah.
All right, this next one I think you guys are going to probably not agree with or whatever. But anyway, it says, CPU boost clock, stop obsessing over technical peaks. So he goes, the boost clock of your CPU is like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. For all intents and purposes in the real world, it doesn't exist. The boost frequency can only be sustained under ideal conditions, something a PC gamer will never achieve. Even when your processor touches this peak, it doesn't stay there for very long.
And that, my friends, is why you need to undervolt your CPU. So... But he's right.
Do you have any opinion on that paragraph there, Trev?
No, not so much. I find it interesting more than anything else. Where you actually got this article from, to be honest with you, because it's one of these kind of quirky, different, unique ones, isn't it?
It's something called XDA. I've never heard.
I've heard of that. Yeah. They're actually okay, to be fair.
All right, here's the next paragraph that is interesting. He goes, to maximize your CPU performance for gaming, all you should care about is the all-core peak frequency, which is always several hundred megahertz lower than the single-core boost clock.
Okay? Absolutely not. But okay, continue.
That's bullshit.
That's what absolutely I not. That's what I want to hear.
No.
All right, it's bullshit. Okay, to continue, he goes... this peak frequency that you see in CPU marketing doesn't concern use cases like gaming or productivity.
Yes, it does.
I was going to say, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
When your CPU is leveraging multiple cores at once, the chances of reaching, let alone sustaining, the advertised boost clock are basically zero.
Okay, so much wrong with that sentence.
I don't even know. I knew you would like this. This is good.
I don't even know where to start on this one. So,
wait, one more sentence.
Oh my God.
Your CPU's power limits and thermal limits are guardrails that already prevent your chip from reaching the advertised boost clock.
even more wrong. See, this is the misinformation I'm talking about, right?
So, yeah.
But when it comes to stock performance, he's right. Mm-hmm. If you buy a CPU, put it in there, do nothing, he's absolutely right. But sadly, those days are kind of over if you wanted to run at its peak performance, so to speak. So remember to my whole talk about the X3D chips earlier, right? So there's a whole lot of tuning you need to do in the BIOS, so to speak. It's called undervolting. You can set your temperatures to another limit. Like, you go into the motherboard and set it to motherboard at that point of time. So your peak performance then. And I'm getting annoyed at this one.
So. It's one of these things. I didn't say too much on purpose because I would probably kick off like Hans did. It's very subjective, of course, isn't it? What he just said, and I don't subscribe to what he's saying at all. I really, really don't. It's never as simple as that. I agree with what he's saying.
I gotta read you some of the comments. Okay, so this one guy.
Well, before says, you start, is he getting trashed in the comments?
Some of it, yeah.
Okay, nice.
So the first comment right off the bat was great. He goes, "Was this written by the same guy who claims boost clocks are a myth?"
Did he really wrote that?
He goes, "If you can't run over your rated boost clock with a Ryzen CPU, you're doing it wrong."
Absolutely, and I got it right here in front of me on how to do it.
So. Now, somebody, I guess, came to his aid. I don't know. It says, "Don't know what your point is." He never said you couldn't run your rated boost clock. He just said the boost clock isn't the most important stat when considering a CPU purchase.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you go into your motherboard BIOS and you go to PBO limits and set it to motherboard, right, instead of the default that it's always on, you're going to have a lot more power to sustain your boost clocks. With your undervolt, and this is very simple explanation, though, with your undervolt, it gets less heat and it can boost at the same clock for longer.
Yep. Ugh. Yeah. It's also
this is the misinformation I'm talking about.
This
earlier.
Article is worth it alone to watch you do this, Hans. It really is.
Stop triggering me.
Why are you doing it?
Let's see. He says, "Yes. Are you even surprised? He posts the same 10 articles every week, and it's always the same article. Jesus. One gets contradicted by Article 5, Article 2 by Article 6, 3 by 7, 4 by 8."
Get this guy on the podcast, Gray. I want to debate him.
We'll rip him a new one.
He goes, "Wow, these are not the areas to focus on or ignore. Not a good article."
No, true.
Here, this is even better. You'll love this one. He goes, "A lot of your information is too old to be used anymore."
Probably like the guy that actually created the article.
Not only are too old, they're just plain wrong in some cases.
This one could have been written by you, man. He goes, listen to this. He goes, "And monitor peak brightness is important for dark scenes with a bright flash or a shaft of sunlight or other bright areas in a mostly dark scene." And then he goes, "I think you need to do some more research for posting another article like this that makes you look behind the times."
Oh, man. But see, the thing is, though, we know this, right? But some people read this and think this is actually correct.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah.
This is what's so annoying to me about all the blatant misinformation out
there.
I don't
know as much as you guys on this, and I'm annoyed as shit on some of the stuff that I do know. I'm going like, wow.
Oh, my God.
What's he talking about?
See, sometimes I'm thinking of opening a YouTube channel and just debunk all that stuff. But I'm not entertaining enough. I'm sorry.
You'd be debunking all day, man. You'd be like, you'd be busy.
This is why you should watch multiple reviews of things you want to buy or you get involved in, or you do your research always.
Yeah, I 100% agree with Trev, and also try sometimes, try and go outside of the mainstream tech tubers also. Mm-hmm. Because the mainstream tech tubers have something to lose sometimes.
Yeah.
So sure. And the other ones check a couple
of the big ones and check a couple of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of like talking about whatever brand it is, like Asus or something. I said, "Well, listen now, everything is great if you use Asus motherboards." And they start going, and they start hawking a motherboard, and they go like, "Now back to the video."
True story.
And then they show you an Asus case and Asus board and Asus everything right behind them. Like,
people that, man. It's like,
The only I do got to give credit to like Gamers Nexus. They're the only ones that are pretty much independent with all that stuff. In fact, they've been getting a lot of trouble. They've got a whole bunch of strikes on against them by YouTube for stuff. And they have two channels too, by the way. I didn't even know that.
Don't you think, by the way, that Gamers Nexus shifted his content?
His what? No, the second channel
he shifted it. So.
No, his second channel does more conspiracies and
On the main channel too, there's less reviews and more exposing, so to speak.
Which there shouldn't be, because that's what his second channel is about. So maybe it'll go back to the way it used to be. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's something that I noticed.
Have you guys watched his documentary? I've only seen a bit of the big GPU one. Yeah.
The NVIDIA one, you mean?
It's good. Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah, it's worth watching.
I didn't watch the whole thing, but I'll tell you, there's been a lot of different articles and popping the lawsuit up ever since
that Bloomberg tried to put on him.
Yeah. He won the copyright.
Hilarious. You see him standing outside the Bloomberg building. They can't do anything. And the guy comes walking out like he's going to do something to him on a public sidewalk.
Are we on your property? I'll step back a little bit, you know. It's,
yeah.
Awesome.
That was funny.
He's great, though. He doesn't hold back when he wants to say F you or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I like it. I respect it, man. Have you finished that side of things, Mr. Gray?
One quick thing I wanted to mention about Gamers Nexus. What's the guy's name again? Steve, right?
Steve.
I was telling Hans off the air, so to speak, that whenever I watch his videos, he talks so damn fast. Even if he does enunciate properly, he just goes. Brr. So I go into the speed control and slow it down to 90%. I had to, man. I couldn't pick up everything.
And you're
saying.
A fellow American? I can understand them. Wow.
Yeah, but he speaks really fast. I mean,
he does. Let's
be honest. I want to hear like some of the cool stuff, and he just goes zoom. And I'm like,
it's because he's got so much to cover, but that's a him problem and not an us problem. So.
Well, imagine his 28-minute videos. If he spoke slower, it would be like 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour.
See, I can't do that. I purposely, my brain has got used to switching and slowing down on purpose, because otherwise people would struggle to understand. It just depends who you're speaking to.
True. What I think is amazing is he goes for a long while without ever taking a drink. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you talk that fast without even taking a swallow of water? He's just in a...
But editing, you don't see that, so you don't know.
No. I watch really carefully a couple of times. I can tell where edits happen.
Even if they're really good and not the crap cuts.
No, I can tell usually. I may not be able to tell every time, but I can tell usually. Okay. And I know he's gone on some, not 28 minutes, but he's gone on some really major, major rants without ever taking a sip of water. Just like, man. His hair is funny, though. Everybody makes fun of his hair. He's got like these things. He's constantly trying to pull his hair back while he's talking.
Really long hair.
I think he's great. There's nobody like him. I mean, you see all the swag that they sell on his channels? Holy moly. I've never seen anybody sell so much stuff in my life. He's got coffee cups, t-shirts.
Linus Tech Tips.
Oh, yeah.
I think he sells more stuff than Linus Tech Tips. And I'll tell you, I was going to buy swag like that, I'd buy his, because he has some funny stuff. He made a whole shirt on that whole expose with the GPUs in China.
Yeah, he done well.
Great.
I don't begrudge that.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, I'm done with that. That's cool. Go ahead.
All good. Yeah. All good, my man. We had the time there to kill. Mr. Matt had some kind of articles, but something's going on with Matt. He's busy. So hopefully next week he can cover that. So we do have time for the quiz. And it means I actually have a tiny chance of winning, because that sad little man is not on today to cheat again. Actually, he doesn't cheat. He just knows all this stuff. But yeah, go ahead, my man.
No problem. All right. So first question. On the EGP quiz, in The Walking... I picked this one for you, Trev.
Oh, I've not played
Dead it. I know, but it just said Walking Dead, and I know you watch that stuff. In The Walking Dead Season 1 video game, what is the name of the main character's brother?
Okay, quick story. My girlfriend is playing that game at the moment. You can check my Steam if you want, so I know this answer.
Oh, wow. I hate you, man. Honest to God.
You can check my Steam if you don't believe me. Recently played The Walking Dead Season 1.
Well, you haven't given the answer yet.
Okay. His name, Jeff.
No. It's Bud.
Bud
Everett.
Nope.
B-U-D. It's B-U-D. It's Bud Everett.
Nope.
It is.
Nope. The answer is Duck. As in B-U-C-K, Duck.
That's
main
wrong.
The character's brother is Duck.
Because you play with Lee Everett. I'm going to Google this right now.
I don't
know. The main character's brother, not the main character.
Yeah, not the main
character's
character.
Brother is, here we go, B. Everett, nicknamed Bud. B-U-D.
What?
Yeah, B-U-D.
All right, I'll double check.
Double check it.
You sure it's season one video game, not season two or whatever the hell?
Type it. Right, Walking Dead game season one.
We might need a VAR decision on this one, Hans.
I'm just saying
I won't give any points out then until we find out. All right. Anyway, in the Mass Effect series, what is the name of the technology that allows faster than light travel? It's a very cool name too. I used to love it when I played the game. I was going, that's neat.
I'm going to guess, man, like Slipstream or something.
I'm going to do the same thing.
You're on the right track, but that's not what they called it.
Lightstream.
When they travel through this thing, what did they call that thing?
No idea.
Transwarp conduit.
No, but you're on the right track again. Mass relay.
I
don't know.
Oh, I would have never called that, man. Come on.
No. I love that name. That game was great when they came out with that. It's Mass relay. That's really. Third question. What is the name of the main antagonist in the Devil May Cry series?
You'll know this. You'll know this.
What is the name of the main antagonist in the Devil May Cry series?
Virgil? Virgil?
I'm going to just guess and say...
Virgil. I'm going to go with Virgil.
I'm going to guess and say Hamish.
Virgil, I'm not sure.
Neither one. It's Mundus. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right.
See how bad we are compared to that.
Yeah.
Mundus. So there you go.
I didn't know this one.
Man, we suck. We really do suck. But
I just Googled the Walking Dead thing again, and it says literally... But Everett.
Is it season one? There's many different...
Season one.
It's the cel-shaded game.
Has a younger brother called B. Everett. But Everett.
Right, I'm happy to give him a point. I don't care.
No, I don't care about... Where'd you get that name? That's why I'm asking it. Or is there a difference between the European version and the US version?
I got it from the sites that have these millions of these questions.
That's so weird.
You're usually right, but I'll find out. Yeah.
I'm going to go in game after this podcast and check this out. I want to know this now.
Right. Well, let's just say you won my point, right? Because, whatever.
Why not?
We know that. Right. Thank you, people. That'll be us for this one. Slightly shorter than usual. And yes, she did say that. We'll be back next week, as always. Hopefully, Mr. Matt's there. But until then, say goodbye to the people, boys.
Bye.
Bye.
See you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Later.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.